dancing. Paul reminded me that I only gave one rule for zero, and it was supposed to be symmetric, so that there should be two rules for, if there are two rules for one, there should be two rules for zero. What have we done? We have done so far multiplicative conjunction. So linear logic of the world. We did also the additive conjunction. We did multiplicative disjunction, I think. So this is written as star tensor star fusion times. This additive conjunction is written as this is the Girard notation. This is the square cup, and sometimes simply as lattice meet. Multiplicative conjunction, the multiplicative disjunction written. In our notation, I propose writing plus. In Girard's notation, should be ampersand turned upside down. Let me have another look. Right, I think I got it better. So par, parallel. Unit, multiplicative. Actually, we did also the truth constant, so we did both multiplicative and additive unit. So I'm writing it as 1, which was Girard's notation for 8-1. I think that was one of the few connectives that he didn't write in a strange way. Yes, that's the only one which was just 1. Sometimes written also as I. Multiplicative unit. Additive unit or proof constant. These rules we all have, left and so for all these guys we have left and right rules. In this case we have just right rule. Maybe I should have a look what is already in your notes. So I would write it as I'm writing it here as top. Sometimes it's written as true. Girard's own notation. No, Girard's notation was again here. He was consistent with general logic of consensus. And then the first rule that was missing in what we wrote yesterday was zero. The name that Girard was using was, well, unit for par or dualizing element. I don't know how to call it otherwise. So I'm going to use notation zero. Girard's notation, confusingly enough, was bottom, even though it's not. It wasn't the smallest element for of the lattice. There was a good convention proposed by Costa Dozhen to write for the additive constants, like for the additive truth, capital T and here is small t. Well, to an extent we're following this, and then. Zero. And then for the additive zero, write small f and capital F, and for multiplicative zero, small f, which at least has the advantage of being maybe easier to understand, to digest for some other custom Girard notation. So, neutral, maybe let's simply write it neutral element for par. And then I gave you only one rule, right? What can I have a look again at what was written so far? Yeah, I only gave left rule for this, and there should be, of course, right rule for this. So we had and this is the empty thing. So this is the left rule, and the right rule was dual to, of course, the rule for units. So as I said, this is neutral element. So comma on the left hand side is really metalinguistic expression of this multiplicative conjunction, tensor, times, or whatever, and comma on the right hand side is metalinguistic expression of the of this paraffin or multiplicative disjunction. Right, and now we are still missing the disjunction thing, right?
And the rule for one, for the left rule for one, we have gamma and delta, so we have on both sides of the double arrow.
Wait. Yes, sorry. The problem is that I'm already starting to think like linear, classical linear logician in terms of single-sided sequence. So we will see a single-sided version of sequence calculus for linear logic today, because you see it in almost every reference on linear logic, so it would be rather hard for you to read or to look up in any book or chapter without knowing why they are writing single-sided sequence. And it's actually useful exercise to work out why this formulation is equivalent to the two-sided one. Right, so that's it for constants, and we still need also additive bottom. So let's call it multiplicative zero. I don't want to call it false, but bottom element. Actually, what was the name Girard himself was proposing for this? It's smallest element simply. Neutral element for I didn't write what this bottom no. Before I introduce neutral element for additive disjunction, I need to introduce additive disjunction itself. So maybe let's do this first. Let's keep some space here. And then the rules for additive disjunction should be simply dual forms, duals of the rules that we have for additive conjunction, so normal lattice connectives. This is Girard notation. This is the one that we are going to use following, for example, the book by Telstra, Lecture of Linear Logic. What was the name being used apart from plus for this? Plus or all additive or so. Obviously, you have this. So these are the right rules. And just like in case of conjunction, we were seeing the difference between the way you accumulate information on the right-hand side. With this junction, we should see the difference between additive and multiplicative connective on the left-hand side. So now, the difference, as you see here, is that we have the same context on the left and right-hand side of the arrow. We are having this information, and I should maybe write this thing. I mean, you can write whichever one you find more convenient in your notes. But I'm trying not to suggest immediately that this is exactly the same as intuitionistic thing, even though both of them can be thought of as simply lattice connectives. Right? I'm not missing anything? No. And then just like for the bottom, for the just like for the top, which was unit for WIF or an additive conjunction, we had only right rule. For bottom, we will have only left rule. So if you have, okay, how we write it. So the way I would write it would be small f. Girard, confusingly enough, was using for zero. Well, he was using zero here. And yet another way to write it would be just bottom. So, yeah, as I said, this is our notation, the one on the left hand side. But you need to see all of them because you will see them also in whatever reference you take, from monographs to journal articles to Wikipedia. You may see other notation too. This, the one from Girard traditional, this is not the same. So if you have false on the left hand side, you can prove anything. There is no need for the right rule to have such a connective. Good. And then we have a connective which Girard himself was seeing at being at the heart of linear logic, even before we get to those mysterious modalities that I mentioned, which was linear negation. And again, there are several possible notations. Notation Trostra proved was tilde. The notation that Girard himself was using was this small orthogonal or absolute sign on the top. This is the way you write, this is what you write in linear algebra and linear algebra that you know for mathematics. And you may notice that Girard's notation, especially with this tensor-like notation, is trying very hard to suggest this connection, and indeed it is possible to interpret linear logic in terms of vector spaces. So the rules are actually exactly what you would expect. So you can simply use this linear negation to travel from left to write as you please.
So are we going to use this notation or
the left? Oh, sorry, yes, because I said that the notation on the left is the one that we are going to use. And I was oscillating myself in my notes, so, yeah. Of course, one could think of other notation like this one, for example. Yeah, I mean, this is the one when I'm most likely to be inconsistent and remind me each time where I am. But I try to be consistent as well using this notation. Well, also for fusion, sometimes in the notes especially, it's very convenient to use ordinary dot or simply omit it from notation at all. Right, so this is almost it, apart, of course, from very important part that are those modalities. Controlling structural rules. But already this part is called multiplicative additive fragment of linear logic. And this part of the formalism is considered, it can be considered a substructural logic in strict sense. It fits in the general framework discussed in huge monographs on substructural logics, two of which are given in the reference list for this lecture, so the book by Reschtal and the book by Gibson, by Galatos, Gibson, Kowalski, and Ono. But then apart from this very strong symmetry between connectives and this very convenient connection that we have in terms of linear negation. We also have this additional special effect, namely modalities controlling structural rules. So far, everything that we were, all the sequence, all the information, all the connectives were behaving like states or perishable resources. The fact that we don't have structural rules means that we have to be very careful at how many copies, how many tokens we have of a given premise, of a given piece of information. That having two copies of a given promise is something else than having just one. And we want to, this whole reasoning is, this whole system of reasoning is set up in such a way that it's optimal both from the point of view of the client, the guy who is giving the input, and the purchaser, the guy who is accepting it. So on the one hand, because we don't have weakening, we are not wasting money. I mean, we're giving exactly as if something costs exactly one copy of a given premise or only premise A, we don't want to spend A and B to purchase the same piece of information or achieve the same effect or achieve the same transition. But on the other hand, if producing a given output does requires having two copies, let's say, of A, we cannot get away as clients or purchasers with just giving one copy of the input and achieving the same effect. But we want to have also some way of describing general information, like axioms or a theory of a given interaction, which will not change no matter how many transitions we make and how many transactions we do. And this is this can be achieved by using those special monoliths. So, bank or of course modality. And I don't think there is any competition to that notation, it's just exclamation mark, but exclamation mark on the left of your formula. And this is what allows you to use contraction, but also allows you to use weakening. So this eternal, unchanging information, which is prefixed by, this is delta, of course, which is prefixed by this modality, can be added, copied, removed as you see fit. And yes, well, moreover, if you have something that you derive in the presence of alpha, then you can also derive it if you have this alpha promoted to the to the range of eternal truth. The name is rather confusingly dereliction. Perhaps it's better to motivate such a name if you look read the rules upside down. And already, before I give the last rule, I want to introduce the dual modality, which is behaving in the same way, but on the right-hand side of the turnstile, which is why not? And this is, again, contraction, but contraction on the right rather than on the left. We can again use weakening with this modality. So And we have dereliction too. So actually, maybe here in the right version, it's more natural to see why the name is dereliction. And now we have to have this rules, left and right ones, as we are going to see very soon, they are really two manifestations of the same rule, but let's not jump back too quickly. So one rule in the left and right incarnation, which is telling us what to do in a special situation when you're reasoning almost entirely with this permanent, lasting, or eternal information, those axioms rather than description of a specific state at a given moment. So this is really describing the same thing on the right and on the left-hand side of. Yes?
What's the difference between dereliction and weakening?
The alpha is kept.
The alpha is kept. I mean, we will see soon how you use the first and how you use the second. But those rules altogether, they tell, it's helpful maybe to recall what we learned about modal sequence calculi. And this rule is just a variant of K rule. Whereas those rules, especially contraction, they look very much like the rules for transitivity. So altogether we have S for like box and S for like diamond here. So important part here is that here both the left and right hand side, both the information that you are given in the input and information that you are given on the output is different than in case of weakening rule. So you can deduce more if you have exclamation mark than when you don't have exclamation mark, because you can copy and contract as you see please. But this is weaker information in a sense than having delta. We don't have that. Maybe we should start doing exercises. So we would be able to show that exclamation alpha gives you alpha, just like box alpha gives you alpha in S4, not in K. And we will have that alpha gives you question mark, or why not alpha, just like you have alpha implies diamond alpha in S4, but not necessarily the other way around. I was already hinting that the part of the context that is preceded with this exclamation mark modalities can be thought of as general axioms, whereas the part without exclamation mark can be thought of as a description of the present state. And this is like a transition. So let's say that we want to describe, for example, a chemical reaction or something like this. Then we have that, in chemistry we have this, for example, right? So the way one would render this in in linear logic is that instead of writing this, we have now and this is, of course, not the same thing as having just one copy of H2. Just like this one is not the same thing as having one particle of water. Whereas if you want to describe general axioms governing, for example, your general laws of chemical reaction, then you would write them with this exclamation mark. And this would be something that you can keep using over and over in your derivations. This is a very crude example, but this leads to several possible interpretations of linear logic. You can go from chemistry to concurrency, as I was saying, and there was quite a developed body of work on, for example, linear logic programming. But this is not what we are going to spend much time on. Okay, so as I said, this is huge and intimidating system of axioms, and perhaps the first thing that we would like to do is to see if there is some redundancy here. And indeed there is. And to wrap our head around this monstrosity, maybe we should first see if we have all the standard De Morgan laws. Because this would suggest to us if it's possible to give a bit more compact, one-sided sequence system for linear logic. Shall I do it already as an exercise? Yeah, maybe I will start doing this and then as people start to warm up, I can ask some of you to stand for a moment. So first thing that we would like to observe is that we have, just like in classical logic and unlike intuitionistic logic, we are able to eliminate duplication. But also we are able to do much more than that. And, of course, we have that try to prove it. Ah, and of course, I forgot about constants, right, so. Ah. And again, I wrote ordinary journal media instead of the square caps. But, Anybody was successful with this one derivation? Whichever one you want. Okay. Well, break the ice.
We have to split this into two parts. And the first one we have. Okay. The implication from left to right. Then first we use the non-splitting rule, which is this one. Plus right rule, okay, now we use the left rule for the longer part. And now we need to somehow split up the gammas and deltas to find sequence that we can prove actually for the right. One is alpha gamma, and the other one is so this one follows by whatever the name for that one was.
Yeah, but did I do this?
Yeah, but this one.
This is just an axiom.
Well, I don't know if you have a name.
Identity axiom, we can call it. I mean, it's clear.
Yeah.
Good. The other direction? Yeah. Can you do it already?
Yeah. Okay. This time we use the writing for the implication. And then the left proof for plus. And again, we split these up so that they're derivable, and to sequence we get are this. But this one follows again directly, and this one
so observe, thanks. So observe that this is already like an axiom, right? It's just one step to an axiom, and just like in classical case. So if you want to have single-sided formulation of linear logic, this would be the starting point. Anybody brave enough to try something else? This would be useful one to have. At least the double negation. Yes? Anyway, you want. Actually, wait, this is already an axiom. because this is not necessarily proposition. We said that this thing can be an axiom, not necessarily when this is just an atom. And if I write alpha, beta, actually I should have stick to notation C, phi, chi, the one that was used commonly. I mean, this can be a literal formula. I think that we could also go for the version where only instances of the axiom for propositional atoms are axioms, but in most references, actually, the people are slightly more liberal. And, so that is very little to prove here, right? It's, and this looks scary, but actually, this is a good exercise to realize how symmetric this whole thing is. Yeah. This was actually the easiest one. Okay. Anybody wants to do something with either one of binary connectives or exponentials? Has anybody done it? What happened?
I just realized I actually applied two rules and not one. And it was that.
There is something strange to the direction in which this whole thing is going, right? So, are you going bottom up or up down?
Yeah, no.
That we have at the very beginning is again similar to what was happening here, as it should be. That's the problem with going sometimes from top to bottom and sometimes from bottom to top. But, yeah, exactly. Okay, we should not spend most of our lecture today doing this. So anybody willing to do either one of those guys or one of those four guys? So far we were dealing with, well, actually no, the implication was instructive, but in order to see how you split the context or how you use the information. Okay. Then we need to take somebody else. But. I mean, there is nothing that is likely to make you get stuck with it. So there are no hidden traps in those books.
I chose.
Okay.
split up this one here. The
this is right. When I'm on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Wave, this is the name that Girard was using, but.
Yeah, so
Girard
was using this one.
Mm-hmm.
But
right, so here we are copying the same guy here. It would be different if it was the multiplicative one, but. Additive with disjunction, yes.
Here we choose a left side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here we choose the right side. Okay.
You switch notation one. Yeah, and we're done, right? We are already comfortable enough to do that, not to do this last step. So the other direction. Yeah, you see my pain. Especially when one wants to integrate notation from several sources.
So again, we put this one to the other side. So. Here we use it on alpha. We use it to get alpha.
Mm-hmm. And we're done, right?
Mm-hmm. So we use it to get beta.
Mm-hmm. And we're done. Yeah. Okay, so now we see how the thing works. And returning for a while to the part about what to do when we have to split the context, or how differently multiplicative and additive connectives are treating the information. Let us, before we go on with serious exercises, let us try to reconstruct an example that goes to the very beginning of examples in linear logic. So I was saying that you can treat the thing on the left-hand side as input and on the right-hand side as output that you produce. And we saw that additive conjunction does simply this funny thing, whereas multiplicative one in particular would combine pieces of information without losing anything. So what If we think that this is input, like let's say this are like this is like 5 euro coin that you can use. Well, not there are no coins. Five euro banknotes that that you can buy to use to buy your favorite newspaper, and here you use 5 euros to buy your favorite sandwich. Then, if you have 2 5-euro coins, you can buy a newspaper and a sandwich. But what does this mean? I mean, clearly. It doesn't mean that with one and the same 5 euro banknote you can buy both newspaper and a sandwich. So what we are saying here, rather, is that we may do a choice. So to use more computer science analogy, that there are two notions of indeterminism, inner and outer ones. I always forget which one is which. So here you can here you can always. Make this, the program can make a choice itself, or you as an agent. But we also have the rule for this junction, right? So the right rules for this junction were basically losing information. But because of the left rule, we knew that if we had if we want to prove something using alpha or beta, then we have to use, then we have to know how to produce it using just alpha, and we also have to know how to produce it using just beta. So in this situation, we don't know what is going to be thrown at us. It is like some external scheduler or operating system or external user or client is making this choice, and. If we want to know that we can produce an output given an input of this type, we have to know what to do, whatever is going to be thrown at us. It's like a match expression. So here is a more developed example of this kind. Imagine that we are in a seaside restaurant somewhere, and they have a menu. So one of choices, let's say this is menu A, and the menu costs 20 euros, and first of all, for a starter and also the first course, we can choose either soup of the day or avocado salad. That's our choice. You tell the waiter when he comes to your desk which one you want. But then, this is fish restaurant, right? And you never know what you are going to catch on a given day. And actually, you see this quite often in proper seaside restaurants, which are not using frozen stuff or whatever, but are dependent on what on a given day is going to be caught by fishermen. On some day maybe mackerel, on some day maybe cod, let's say. And then we can say that if you want to make your meal a bit more caloric, you can pay additional 3 euros, and then you can also get panna cotta or whatever, tiramisu, whatever you want with your meal, and then you can have. And then, as the last thing comes, coffee, and this is very American style. So they give you this huge mug, and you can add as many refills as you want. How do you render this kind of thing in linear logic? This is also a good opportunity to see all these connectives taken together in action. So we are giving 20 euros as input, right? And out of this, we are getting soup of the day. Or avocado salad. So this or is this or is very, very different than this or. This or, in fact, the or that we are making this choice is like disconnected. So let's say that soup is S, avocado salad is A, M is mackerel, C is for cod, P is for panna cotta. Aha, I already used C for cod. So K for coffee. So, first of all, you are making the choice yourself between soup and avocado salad. But this 20 euros is giving you more. We are combining, like with this rule, tensor. We are combining it with what we get as the main course, but the main course involves this other or, the or that is not dependent on us, but it's forced upon us by external scheduler. So we have mackerel or cod. And then I have this bit saying that E with surcharge of 3 euros. So if you, and maybe I could actually already replace this tensile here with linear implication to this whole thing, right? We have time more disponent. So here I'm saying that if in addition you are going to put 3 euros, then you are going to obtain panna cotta. Or if you don't want to, this is your choice. You don't have to get this panna cotta. You can leave the situation unchanged. And then we have coffee, but you can have as much of this coffee as you want. So you will get one cup of...
You don't get away without having at least one coffee.
Yeah, this will arrive on your table, right? Okay, maybe we can tweak it so that we can tell the waiter that you don't want it at all. But this will arrive on your table, you can just leave it unfinished. But if you want to, you can, and then you don't have to add anything. You can add one copy of this coffee, two copies of this coffee, as many times as you want. So here you see all those, more or less all those connectives in action. Well, it's hardest to make sense of parallel or, but remember that this is really implication, these guys. So if you talk about parallel or combined with this linear negation, you will have it both here and here. Okay, so that was a bit frivolous, but maybe instructive. And returning then to what we have, what we obtained here, assuming that we finished this exercise, which we did not. As I was saying, this can be used to formulate much more compact version of the sequence system for linear logic. So we can formulate it in such a way that there is nothing on the left-hand side. You see that it doesn't matter whether you are on the left or on the right, because you can always use this double negation, because you can always use linear negation and replace, for example, our axiom by this. I'm not sure if it makes sense to write this right now, but. Yeah, maybe it's so compact and quick that it actually makes sense. So then the axiom that you get in the single-sided sequence is this. The cut rule will be saying that you can always cut a negated formula together with its together with the formula itself, which is a bit like a resolution, one can say. Well, for one, and actually for most other connectives, you can simply take the right ones. This will be restricted. Aha, and one more thing. We are now treating negation not as a primitive connective, but as a defined one. So we only have atoms and their negations, A and not A. This is part of our syntax. And then for compound connectives, we take this thing as definition of what it means to negate a formula. Here in the axiom and in the cut rule, which can be eliminated. So this is this multiplicative combination of information, and then the additive combination is just. So it's this. The rule for parallel is sweet and obvious. This is exactly what is encoding the comma. Whereas for or we have what we have. Right, I cannot give any rule for false because there is no right rule for false. And now the rules for modalities. And of course, now it's more easy or more easier or more natural to work with why not rather than of course. Remembering that bank or of course will reappear as syntactic abbreviation. On instances, negations of more complex formulas as syntactic abbreviation. Now we still need to get to dereliction and promotion. Dereliction still can be formulated in terms of why not only. But in order to formulate promotion, I need to use bank. So this is much easier, right? I mean, much shorter than what we have, but due to the fact that we need to give this long syntactic definition of what negation is. We will try, I think, to keep working with two-sided sequence because this is what we were using all the time. But you can also see that it could have been possible, for example, for classical logic or for modal logic to give those one-sided sequence. And in classical logic, lots of this stuff collapses. So in particular, this thing and this thing are one and the same thing. Similarly, this and this. So additive and multiplicative version of all the connectives. This and this. And bank and why not have to be treated simply as identity. So that's one way to see classical logic as a very degenerate case of linear logic, but we can do better than that. As it turns out, we can actually translate both classical logic and even intuitionistic logic into linear logic faithfully. Well, of course, being able to translate intuitionistic logic means automatically that you are able to translate classical logic if you compose it with a double negation translation. But there are even more optimal or more direct translation than the one those that you would obtain composing one after another. A single-sided formulation. All right, but there is at least one exercise that is still useful to do before one tries to give even the translation to classical logic, not to mention, and at least when if one wants to prove correctness of this translation. How much do we have left? Yeah, so maybe. Maybe we will do this auxiliary exercise first. So we would like to have some distribution laws for why not, and of course, just like we had for modality, for ordinary modality, both K and S for case, that that it distributes over conjunctions. Well, here we also have this law, but with a twist. So maybe actually let's start with the other S4 axioms. And then the distribution part. So within the scope of the modality, we're writing the additive multiplication. But when we distribute it, we have to change it to the multiplicative one. And of course, we will have a dual law then, because you already begin to realize how symmetric everything is in linear logic. So we could alternatively prove that, you tell me what it is. We should be able to obtain this out of automatic corollary. What is it? What I should write here. I wanted this to be exercise about exponentials only, but maybe another exercise that should be started very early in the game is this. So, as I was hinting, clearly we don't have distributive law ordinary between lattice connectives, so additive connectives, conjunction, disjunction do not distribute between each other, but it doesn't mean that there is no distributive law at all. And this is why Girard came up with this insane notation, which is not even symmetric in the way one would expect, because he wanted this to look like which is looking very nice and mathematical, especially if you're working with vector spaces and linear algebra. And this law, by the reason why I reminded myself of this is because this law is also behind why these things are called exponentials. So raising something to the why these things are called additive, and why those things are called multiplicative. So if you take x to the power of 2 plus 3, then this is the same thing indeed as x to the power of 2 times x to the power of 3. So this is multiplicative, this is exponential, and this is additive. Okay, I don't think that we should aim to do all of these things in the classroom, but So? Sorry, it's very confusing. I again switch between two different notations inside one lemma. So these are my old bad habits from structural logic. Lucas, Johannes, any of you wants to try one of those? You're stuck. Johannes? Sorry, which one is Lucas and which one is Johannes? Sorry, Lucas? I would like to believe so, but... Well, what is the difference between this and this one? I mean, remember that here you are drawing things on you are switching freely between left and right hand side. So a bank on the right hand side becomes why not on the right? But why is this problematic?
This
is a mistake actually. If you look at the well, actually this is a good exercise then to try and work out, but
Mm-hmm.
delta mu, but isn't this, yeah, this looks just like this expression.
Wait, this was weakening? No, this is weakening. That was the, yeah, that was the reliction. Wait. Now I'm beginning myself to. It was given for why not, but actually in my notes I have it for of course. Moment. Let us try to rewrite the. So let us return to this two-sided formulation. So the two-sided formulations of the problematic rules was if I have this, then indeed I can promote it to exclamation mark. And on the left, I could, on the left, I could promote it to the why not. Whereas the direction was indeed saying that the direction was concerned with punk on the left and why not on the right. These are the rules that we had, right? That's what I wrote. I'm not changing them for in the two-sided formulation. So let's see what happens if I try to make them single-sided. If I throw this guy to the left-hand side, then I will get questioned. Yeah, so this can be forgotten, yes. But this is what I have here, right?
Yeah.
That's the right rule, so. And then the other rule will be saying that, well, here you can just. No, this is also fine. So, but maybe contraption, let's see, so.
No, I think the single-sided rules are fine, but the double-sided rules that you wrote earlier, they were the ones that you wrote there, so. So, yeah, for the double-sided rule, you earlier on you wrote why not instead of bang in front of the alpha.
Where, for promotion or for the direction?
For promotion.
In this,
yeah. So here you had a why not in front.
Oh, sorry.
That was the whole point of this question.
It's a very good then that I wrote two versions because now we have at least some way to check consistency of what I'm doing. Yes, absolutely correct. It's a pity we didn't try to do one of the modalities in the previous De Morgan exercise because then it would probably come up easier. Cool. Okay, so now we don't have so much time left. I mean, you can work now with whichever rules you find more suitable, two-sided or one-sided. Is there anybody willing to attack? Well, any of those, but essentially one of those three guys. Well, 2 or 3 minutes, it doesn't really make that much sense. So we'll need to be ready with the derivation. You ready? Okay. Well, especially the first, yes. So let's write just those two, and the rest will be left for you to have fun.
Okay. So for the first one, this just follows from here. Relation and then just identity rule, and the other one now we can use the correct promotion rule,
yeah,
and we get bang alpha and bang alpha,
and this is axiom. Yeah. Okay, so the rest is for you to have fun with all the interesting derivations. Maybe we'll return to it if we do any translation next week. Otherwise, we will start to do semantics in terms of phase spaces, and we leave it flat for House of Tuple. So, see you next week.